All right. Thank you for that introduction, and thank you for sticking around to hear this talk. I'm really excited to talk about some of our research efforts that are ongoing and get some feedback from you guys later on this evening during that bullpen session as well. So one thing I think it's first good to define, I guess. I already broke this. There we go. To define what is the rumen microbiome, and I think microbiome has kind of been a buzzword in the news in terms of the human, but the rumen microbiome, I think, is more exciting. And what it is, it's the microbial community and all of the genetic components of those microbes that inhabit the rumen. And really, this work isn't new to us. Robert Hungate in the 50s really started characterizing the rumen microbiome. But with a lot of recent advancements in technologies, we're able to better characterize this rumen microbiome and look at function of these different microbes that reside in the rumen. And so all the microbes that are in the rumen come from each of the domains of life. We have predominantly bacteria, but there are methanogens, which come from our archaea, and then there are fungi and protozoa from the eukarya. And really, these exist in different proportions, like I said, predominantly bacteria, but they're all working together in this symbiotic relationship for proper rumen function, for digestion of feedstuffs, and really for producing energy that the host requires. And so yesterday it was talked about how really incredible ruminant livestock are, that they can convert what they consume into this very high quality end product. And the reason that they're able to do that is because of the microbes that reside in their rumen. And so to keep this system healthy and to keep it moving and to give the best energy, I guess, to the host, what we're really trying to do is figure out how to keep a balance of these different microbial species in the rumen. You're not going to hear me talk today about a specific microbe, but it's more looking at the microbiome in its entirety. So the balance has to be maintained so that that the gut remains healthy and that you're optimizing breakdown of the feedstuff to generate the most energy for the host. And so beyond this, there's a lot of different reasons why we actually care about the microbiome when we're looking at the cow itself. One thing I think that's quite popular in the press, of course, is greenhouse gas emissions. That's just a natural byproduct from ruminal fermentation. Those archaea, those methanogens, they're converting hydrogen into methane, but that's a necessary process so that we're not getting that accumulation of hydrogen in the rumen. These microbes are also critical for growth of the animal, so up to 70% of the energy for the host actually comes from ruminal fermentation. We've got the immune system, so these microbes are especially important in the early calf for development of not only gut health, but the immune system of the entire animal. The development of the rumen relies a lot on those early microbes, which is what I'm going to talk a little bit about today. Energy production, I've touched on. Of course, digestion, right? These microbes are what make it possible to, you know, have grazing animals that can convert into very high quality end products. The health of the animal, and then what we focus on is the implications of the microbiome with feed efficiency. And so really the goals in my lab, the first one is how is the rumen colonized? So we don't know. We know a lot about the rumen microbiome, but we don't have a clear picture of how the rumen is actually colonized. How do bugs get in there? And at what stage do they get in there, and where are they coming from? The next thing I like to think about is what factors are affecting this colonization. Okay, so what can we do from a management standpoint to actually alter, okay, or influence this colonization? The other thing is trying to characterize microbiomes that are indicative of a highly efficient, productive animal. So what microbiomes do we see associated with more or less efficient animals? And then ultimately the goal is, can we develop intervention strategies where we can actually program the microbiome in such a way that's going to help the host? And so there's a lot of research out there looking at fetal programming, developmental programming, and we know that the way we manage our cows, especially during gestation, has an impact on that calf's performance long term. And I guess what I am interested in is introducing the microbiome to that conversation as well. So the reason I care about this early microbiome so much, because you might be wondering, the rumen, when a calf is born, it's very rudimentary. It's basically non-functional at birth. But I think there's a lot of things that we're learning that even though it is non-functional, the early microbes there are essential to proper development. And so for a long time, you know, the literature says that the rumen is sterile at birth and that colonization happens rapidly after calving, and that this is colonized via the birth canal, maternal factors such as licking or suckling, consumption of colostrum, also the calves that are consuming the bedding that they're in. That serves as a source of microbes for their colonization as well. But what I'm really interested in is the pre-calving factors. So what's happening during gestation that might be affecting this early development? And so a lot of these ideas actually come from human literature. So oftentimes, you know, the humans are using animal models. But I think there's a lot of data on the human side that can translate or can be looked at least on the livestock side. And one of those is these pre-parturition factors. So in humans, we know that the maternal oral microbiome, the placental microbiome, and the amniotic fluid microbiome really strongly correlates with the offspring's of the baby's gut microbiome. And so in humans and in non-ruminant models, they've shown this influence. And we're beginning to see some of these trends show up in ruminant species as well. So on your guys' left, it might be hard to see at the back, this is a study that came out last year, and they looked at the meconium from the calf, so that very first feces from the calf. They looked at fecal samples at 24 hours, at 7 days, and compared it to a fecal sample from the cow, an oral swab from the cow, and then a vaginal swab as well. And what you see, that newborn bar, the first one, and the adult mouth overlap much like they do in the humans. And so what we're seeing is that a lot of the microbes that we're finding in the meconium, so representative of the early gut, also reflects the oral microbiome of the cow, which is interesting. And they also have shown that in the rumen, this on your guys' right side, this is a study that just came out this year, the inner ring shows the microbiome of a calf within minutes after delivery. And so what this data, this is promising to me because it's showing that there is a microbiome just minutes after delivery. And so this idea of a sterile rumen is beginning to be questioned a little bit. And I don't think we have concrete answers yet, but I think it's worth looking at things that are happening during gestation and the influence that has on the early gut. And so the reason I care so much about this early animal is because the microbiome and the fermentation that's happening early on is really setting that animal up for success later on. So it is helping develop the rumen. As I said, when the calf is born, the rumen is very rudimentary. It's really not functional. But there's so much development that has to happen early on, and a lot of that development relies on the end products from these microbes that are in the early rumen. So when VFAs are produced from fermentation, hydrogen, a lot of different end products are produced from fermentation, these things are helping to develop our rumen so that it can actually do its job as the animal matures and it starts consuming things besides milk and has to break down feedstuff. These early fermentation patterns are helping with this. The other area is the establishment of the immune system. So this is kind of a tricky area just because it's fairly new, but looking at how these early microbes are helping to establish that early immune system, working with gut barrier function. And so what they're finding is that even though the microbes you find in a calf just minutes after it's born, there aren't that many of them, it's not as robust as what we find in a mature cow, they are playing very important roles that are going to affect the health of the calf. And I think we all know that if we compromise the health of that calf early on, that's likely to follow that calf throughout its life. And so the last point is this optimum stage for intervention. For those of you that are familiar with work in the rumen microbiome area, it's a very, can be a frustrating thing at times because so many things can alter the rumen microbiome. You get it where you want, and then there's a weather change, or there's a slight change in feed, whatever it may be. There's dramatic shifts in the microbiome. So it's really hard for us to maintain a certain microbial profile because so many things can affect it. And there's some data now that shows if we intervene early, so before the rumen's very functional, that some of these changes might actually last into as the animal matures, and so we might have an opportunity to actually program early on. So really there's three kind of facets to the research that I'm doing. One is looking at different maternal microbiomes. So in livestock species, we don't really have a lot of data characterizing different maternal microbiomes, including the vagina, the placenta, amniotic fluid, even the oral cavity of the cows, and then the rumen as well. But then also looking at how different management practices, how the nutrition during gestation, we look at delivery methods, we look at rearing methods, and also maternal genotype and how that can influence the development of this offspring gut microbiome. And so I think it's pretty clear in the literature that there are distinct differences in the microbiome between high efficient and lowly efficient animals. But I don't think we know how to program the rumen microbiome to get there. And so I'm proposing that we consider some of these maternal factors as a way to get there. So I'll show a little bit of data from three separate studies. Some of these are from the end of my PhD and then some in my new position. But the first was looking at maternal gestation, nutrition during that time period, and the role that mode of delivery has on the early development of the rumen. Then looking at maternal genotype and pre- and post-calving factors. And then the last data I'll present is a survey study that we're working on currently where we're trying to characterize different maternal microbiomes. So with all of these studies, there is a lot of rumen fluid that is collected on these studies. We collect it very simply with a tube that we get down into the rumen, have a big syringe on the end, and it's a very effective method. And on a cow, it's quite easy to get 50 mils of samples in no time. Then we actually isolate microbial DNA from those samples, and we use next-generation sequencing to sequence that DNA, and then there's a lot of time behind a computer where what I try to look at is alpha diversity, which tells you how many species can we actually detect in this sample compared to another. Then we look at beta diversity, which is actually looking at not only what microbes are present, but in what abundance. So is there an increased abundance of this one type versus another? And then we also look at just taxa abundance differences. So this would be looking at maybe there's more methanogens in this sample than in another. And so the graphs, I'm not sure if you can see them at the back, but the ones on your guys' left, those box plots are what we use to represent alpha diversity. So the higher up the box is on the y-axis indicates that there's more different types of microbes present in that sample. And so when we looked at calves born to cows that were fed at the NRC requirements, and calves born to cows that were nutrient-restricted during late gestation, there wasn't a difference in alpha diversity. So we didn't see a difference in the number of different species that you could find in these samples. But the beta diversity plot, which is kind of cut off on the bottom, the red dots are the calves born to control-fed cows, and the blue are those fed to the nutrient-restricted cows. Statistically, here we see a difference in composition. So this was kind of the first time that someone's really looked at late gestation nutrition and the impact that has on the gut microbiome of the calves. And so we were able to detect differences in the composition, indicating to us that indeed the gestational nutrition is influencing the microbiome of these young calves. And so then in that study, we also, this is kind of a pilot project, we wanted to look at the effect of mode of delivery on the microbiome. And by no means am I suggesting that any producer should do planned cesareans, because that's everyone's nightmare. But what we did this so that we could understand how much the birth canal is actually contributing to that colonization. So by removing that and doing a C-section, you could really see the influence that this has. In the box plot, our alpha diversity, we see much higher, so there were more different species detected in calves born naturally compared to calves that were born via C-section. And that's not really surprising to us because we essentially took the calf away from experiencing that entire birth canal, and so they weren't exposed to those different microbes, and so we expected there to be a little bit less diversity. And again, the compositions were different between these two as well, which complements the human literature. And again, this isn't like something I would ever suggest for a management tool at all, but I think it's just helping us to quantify how much that birth canal is contributing to that early colonization. So once we completed these studies, we wanted to take another step and look at some common factors that, you know, producers might actually face. And so one of these was looking at the effect of maternal breed. There was a great talk yesterday about crossbreeding systems, and I think considering the effect that breed has on the microbiome is also something that's important. This study was funded by the USDA. My PhD advisor, Dr. Christy Kamak, got this grant. And so this grant's kind of spilled over from my PhD into my position now. But what we did here, all Charolais and Angus cows were fed at the same level, so there was no nutritional difference. We did separate them by breed from start to finish. But what we did with these cows, so we split within each breed, there were three treatment groups. We had our control group, so we didn't mess with those guys at all. And then in the C-section group, we did a planned cesarean, and so those calves were delivered that way. And then the cow raised her own calf. And then the bottle-reared group, these calves were born naturally, but then we took the calf away at 24 hours and raised it on a bottle. And so what we're trying to get at with this study was not only what's happening with that birth canal again, but also how much does mothering and that influence actually impact the microbiome of these calves. And so what we found with our breed differences was that The difference in the microbiomes between the Angus and the Charolais really became more pronounced as the animal matured. So early on, there really weren't distinct differences between the Angus and the Charolais calves, which doesn't really surprise me because at that time point, I think their microbiomes are so rudimentary that I didn't really expect to see differences. But as the animal matures and we begin to see the differences between the Charolais and the Angus in terms of biological type, we really start to see some differences in the microbiome. So you see separation from the red dots and the blue dots, just showing that, again, breed is impacting the microbiome, which is something that maybe we can capitalize on in terms of selection decisions. We could maybe look at effects of crossbreeding or heterosis on the microbiome. And so that was not necessarily novel data, but I think it was interesting for us to just see that that becomes more pronounced as the animal actually matured. If we looked at our effect of different treatments, so our cesarean or our bottle rearing, these differences were really only prominent early on, and as the animal matured, these differences kind of went away. Some of them remained post-weaning, but really early on is where we see the difference. So these plots, the colors represent different phyla of microbes, and you can see some proportional differences. The bottle calves are on the far left, the C-section are in the middle, and the control on the right. And so we did see some compositional differences between these treatment groups, saying that, you know, those early alterations, whether it was the way we delivered that calf or the way we raised it, were having impacts on the microbiome, but a lot of these things didn't persist. But what we weren't able to quantify was the impact that this might have on tissue level development. So we didn't collect tissue from these calves, gut tissue, to see what, you know, impact this might have had on that level. And we don't have a good way to quantify health status. As you guys can imagine, our bottle group calves needed treated a lot more than our other calves. But we can't necessarily attribute that to microbiome differences. But really, the kind of the big point, the big take home from this study is we wanted to see if any of these factors, breed, mode of delivery, rearing, if any of those things had an effect on their feed efficiency. So we did a post-weaning feed test, a 70-day test in the GrowSafe system, where we were able to get individual intake. We calculated residual feed intake as our metric of feed efficiency for these calves. And so if we look at some of the performance data by breed, the Charolais are in the blue and the Angus in purple, there was no statistical difference between the Angus and the Charolais with intake, with average daily gain, with initial or final body weight. There weren't any differences. But when we looked at RFI, we did see a breed difference here. So the Charolais calves had a more negative RFI, indicating on an RFI basis at least a more efficient animal who's consuming less than what we expected but still maintaining that level of gain. Whereas the Angus had higher RFI values, which, again, with RFI indicates a less efficient animal. This is just one measure of feed efficiency, and it's not the gold standard by any means. But with RFI, we see this drastic difference in breed. And then if we looked at the microbiome from these calves, it mimicked the differences we see with feed efficiency. So the graph on your left is looking at the breed difference. So the Angus are in red and the Charolais in blue. And as I mentioned, the breed differences become more prominent as the animal matured. And I think we see better separation between these two groups during this post-weaning feed test than we did early on. But what I'm really excited about is this graph on the right, which is showing your high RFI animals in red, so our lowly efficient animals. And then the blue dots are the low RFI, so the negative RFI are more efficient animals. And we see a very clear separation here, which is showing that the microbiomes between our highly and our lowly efficient animals is very different. And so we can think about this in two different ways. Maybe we can use the microbiome to determine feed efficiency, to predict efficiency, or maybe the other way around. Maybe there's things we can do to manipulate the rumen microbiome to make an animal more efficient. And so just seeing this clear separation, I think, was really exciting for us. And really what these studies kind of drove home is that we know, because we follow these calves all the way from birth through the finishing phase, and what we see is that one of the biggest influences on the microbiome, and this isn't surprising, is just age. So as the animal matures and it starts to eat different feed, it's exposed to a lot of different environmental factors, the microbiome changes rapidly. And it's a good thing it does, because the microbiome that it has starting out would not be capable of converting, you know, a feedlot ration into the high quality end product that we get. But what we also learned from these studies was that maternal factors are affecting the rumen microbiome and fermentation and performance. And so mode of delivery and rearing type had some differences that did persist. They weren't super strong. But some of them did persist. But maternal breed, we know host genetics plays a huge role in the microbiome, and I think these data kind of help confirm that. And then also that gestational nutrition has an impact on the calf microbiome. The data I showed was from calves at a week old. I didn't follow those calves all the way through. So I'm interested to see if these impacts follow that calf, and so we'll be doing a study this calving season to look at that kind of long term. And so I still have this dream where we have the potential for programming and intervening to alter the microbiome to really help efficiency of the host, because I'm not a microbiologist, I'm an animal scientist, and it's the host that I really care about, but I think these microbial species are really important to host performance. But we still don't know how colonization happens. And so this survey study we're working on right now, we had two primary objectives to this. One was to evaluate different maternal microbiomes that really haven't been evaluated in beef cattle. And so we wanted to characterize different maternal microbiomes and then compare those to the early gut microbiome in the calf. So for this study, prior to calving, we collected rumen fluid from the cow, we did vaginal swabs, and we also collected amniotic fluid from these cows. Then at calving, we were the crazy people that were trying to get to the placenta before the cow turned around to eat it. And we collected three different tissue types from the placenta. We got meconium from the calf, blood, and rumen fluid. And these calves are now on a feed efficiency test in our GrowSafe system. And so one of my grad students, Kelly Woodruff, just submitted an abstract to Midwest Animal Science Meetings comparing the cow rumen microbiome to the meconium and the rumen fluid of the calf. And it is really exciting data. We just got this back, so this is kind of preliminary analyses. But the cow is the sample in the middle. And so you see her alpha diversity is much higher than the meconium on your left or the calf rumen fluid on the right. This doesn't shock us, since a mature cow has a vastly different microbiome as it's actually, you know, consuming feedstuffs that requires this fermentation. But what's exciting with our beta diversity plots, the red are the meconium, the green are the calf rumen fluid, and then the orange are the cow rumen fluid, is that we see some overlap with the cow and the calf rumen fluid. So this is exciting because it looks like some of what we see in that early calf rumen is dictated by what we see in the cow rumen. And we can change the cow rumen microbiome. We can do that. And so if we're targeting a specific microbiome in the calf, we might be able to do that through the cow. So really the objectives of these studies are to look at mechanisms of colonization and inoculation, but more so to investigate intervention strategies that can alter or program the microbiome. And I'm obviously very early on in this research objective, but I just think that we've considered for a long time how we manage the cow during gestation and what we're feeding her, what her protein content is, and how that affects the calf long term. And so what I'm just proposing is that we also think about the microbiome in this area, because we might be able to make some changes that are going to improve calf health and feed efficiency long term through the gut microbiome. So I'd like to thank, I have a great lab group. Travis Smith at the beef unit helps me out with all of my crazy research ideas. And then my PhD advisor, Dr. Christy Kamak, who is continuing to work with me on some of these projects. And I really look forward to visiting with you guys tonight at the bullpen session, because I'm intrigued to know your thoughts on this and these objectives. And if I can answer any questions, I'd be happy to. Thank you.